This is a Collider.com audio interview.
How many takes did it take to launch
that? When did we get 3 or 4 out of that?
Yeah,
I thought she was dead after the first take, though. There was no speed ramping or any effects done.
That's
that.
That's speed, her hitting the wall.
That's the real in-camera footage. Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah, she was on a ratchet. And the funny thing is we had the guy who played Colossus in X3 was one of our stunt guys. So he was actually the guy on the ratchet at the time. It was really kind of bizarre.
So she was all black and blue by the end of that.
Yeah, she got banged up a bit, but she did great. I mean, she did some... I mean, it looks pretty vicious. No special effects needed on that. So.
What's the actress's name?
It's Kristen Hager is Jesse, but I forgot the name of the stunt woman that was playing her for that shot.
Who's the Colossus guy? Did he also double us from the Predator?
Yeah, he was one of the Predators in some of the... we had him, and I think was it his brother?
His brother, or? Yeah.
I think, yeah, there were two of the stunt Predators up in Canada.
Now, Robert asked you about the continuity of the mythology, and the first Alien versus Predator kind of switched up some of the mythologies to suit his own needs. Have you removed some of that and gone back to the original?
Some stuff's been smoothed over. I mean, like we redesigned the altar that Scar's body was on to make the ship a little more Predator-ish. You know, there's a couple things. You know, we tried to stay as close as we could, but there's a few things that we had to massage a little bit just to kind of make the movie more what we want it to be.
So this is immediately following EVP, is that what it
yes,
is?
Yes,
yeah. Shortly after.
I mean, we redo the Scar burst scene, and then there's some extra stuff on the ship. Which actually, I think they just released on Yahoo.UK the first 5 minutes of the movie today.
Yeah.
Like, slightly cut down. There's a few shots missing out.
And there's also a shot of what we consume as the Predator homeworld.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that looked like what was in like a ship docking bay or something. It was one of those old ships, Predator ships. Or
yeah, there's an exterior of the planet, the big wide on the planet itself with the wolf ship flying away, and then a hole inside his big temple thing where he receives the distress signal and.
Yeah. And
watches all the playback on that.
Spots too,
yeah, we started teasing that in there.
Yeah.
So is this the stuff that's teasing for possible, you know, another film that's going to maybe take us to Predator Homeworld? Or?
Yeah, I mean, what we've kind of told them is I think this is kind of, to us at least, the end of the Earth story for this. The next one's got to be in space. You know, this is the way we kind of end this, it's like we're kind of done here. So it'd be nice the next one maybe before Alien, but definitely kind of needs to be more of a space epic.
So could we get to a point where there's a movie that's just monsters and
nobody
comes at all?
Actually,
that's a hard sell.
It's a hard sell. Because we pitched on the first one, and we had, like, our pitch was, like, Dances with Wolves, and we had, like, 45 minutes where there's going to be no spoken language at all in the movie. And, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't get the first movie, but we tried.
Like, yeah, sounds great. We'll call you.
Actually, so. Can you talk a little bit about when you found out you didn't get the project?
Yeah, it actually went pretty quick. I mean, we'd met on the first one, so we met all the executives over there. And our effects company, we've been doing a lot of work for Fox because, you know, we got the BAFTA for Day After Tomorrow, and we did all the Fan 4 movies, X-Men 3, just a ton of stuff over the years. And we pitched on Wolfenstein and got really close to selling that at Fox. And then when this thing came around, it was all the same executives and everyone, and... You know, we got our hands on it. We had about a week or so to put together a visual presentation and our ideas of how to take what script they had and where we wanted to kind of put the movie. And, I think we had one really good meeting with them. And then we had, I think it was like two other meetings after that. And then we had the job booked.
Can you talk about the design of the Predalien? How many incarnations you guys went through? Is that the toughest design?
It was definitely one of the trickier ones. I mean, because one of the hard things is there's so many other people that have to see stuff and approve and trying to get everyone on the same page. And one of the cool things is with ADI is guys have, like even for like the Predator, I mean, they must have had 60, 70 different concepts painted together of all different Predators. I know some of them were from the previous movie they didn't use. A bunch were new ones they did. Like the whip was something that one of their concept artists just happened to have, this huge bull whip. And as we went over there in the first meeting, we saw them. We're like, holy shit, this thing's that's about as cool as it gets. We got to put that in the movie. So it was just really good working with Tom and Alec on that. Because what they would do is we did our initial designs in Photoshop with our designer. We showed the guys from ADI what we wanted to do. And then they would start doing their paper designs. We'd get something kind of close. And then they would start building all these maquettes. And then we'd start with the head maquettes, and then they'd start with the full body maquettes. And we probably went through a bit
of design. Yeah, I remember going through some of the artwork, and it was like Predalien version 65, and you're like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Well, because
it's just naturally go through a lot of iterations, but there was, there were some concerns. We wanted to keep him very much, or her, very much an alien. So there was some back and forth in terms of how many predator sort of characteristics should come through. So that was what one of the tricky things was.
It's one thing when like us, when you get like all the kind of like the geeky fans who know everything, watch the movies. Like, oh, I know that's obviously a warrior alien. I know that's, the Predator alien. But the biggest issue we had with the design is because we're going so dark with the movie, and there's a lot of rain and atmosphere and everything. As a normal person, watch the movie, gonna be able to tell the difference? And that was like one of our biggest tricks, is we knew that hardcore fans would get it instantly, but. Good design also has to appeal to people who really don't give a shit about the franchises, just want to go see a movie and they go to and actually like it. And we had to make sure we included all those people in it as well. So that was one of the things, was making sure. So that's why we cheated the pigmentation, a little bit more yellow on her, and just things so that even if you just see flashes of her, at least a general audience member would be able to track it, but at the same time not watering down the design or anything to make it kind of generic.
Were there key things that you had to have? I mean, like in the Predator, the key things, the fangs, the alien, the key things that had.
For us, it was keeping the alien teeth. We think that's because that's such a distinct alien feature. And having the dome. That's why we went back with putting the skull actually underneath the glass dome, so it has the real Predator skull under there. Because even though in the original Alien, you never really could see it because the photography was lit so dark. And we have a couple shots in the movie where you actually can see the whole skull feature and everything underneath. And then with the mandibles and that, because of the egg laying scenes, we wanted the mandibles on there so she could actually kind of like wrap around almost like a face hugger in a way and grab people's faces as she's doing the impregnation. So that was kind of an important design thing. Yeah, and that way too, and it also just looks, I mean, in the battle sequences, I think she looks pretty fearsome because when she has the mandibles closed, she looks more predator, but when they open up, you see the distinct alien teeth and everything, so.
Alien fans have been waiting a long time to see aliens on Earth. How much fun can you have with that, finally, within the context of the ADP story?
Well, I mean, the thing that we were trying to be careful of is we didn't want to have, like, aliens dancing in front of McDonald's and stuff. So I know a lot of people are worried when you're on Earth, it's like, what are the locations going to be? So that's one of the first things in our pitch. We said the movie's got to take place, power's got to get knocked out, and it's got to be, we want it raining the whole last night. Because, seeing an alien in broad daylight or just plain view is going to look stupid no matter what you do. I mean, the reason why it worked in all the other movies is you're in a dark spaceship, flashing, blinking lights, steam jets everywhere. I mean, you had all these great elements to cover them up, basically. And, if you don't do that, they're going to look like guys in suits. So that's why we made sure that as the first thing we did was get all that atmosphere and that in there. And then the second thing was picking cooler locations. The first big battle takes place in this huge underground sewer network. The next battle takes place in a power plant. Then you got the big rooftop battle. Then there's a National Guard battle on the street in the rain. So we tried to pick locations that, even though they were earthbound, they still reminiscent of, like the power plant's going to look very much like Alien. It's got all the yellow, warning beacons and a lot of steam and everything. So we're trying to give it that space sort of feel. So even though it is Earth, it doesn't. Try not to make it feel cheesy or anything. Just give it much more gritty kind of environments.
Do you have do you have other films sort of conceptualized going beyond this? You mentioned going into space and sort of approaching the timeline of the original movie.
Yeah, we've been talking very loosely with the writer and all that. What could be the next one? But we're gonna wait to see how this one does, and then we'll figure out what the deal is. But yeah, I definitely think the next one needs to be in space.
This franchise is obviously a fanboy's dream. What is the way in for general audiences?
The big thing that we did with the movie is just trying to make a good, scary film. I mean, we tried to treat it not as like a versus movie, because I think sometimes people see versus movies being kind of cheesy. You're Freddy versus Jason, which are entertaining, but there's a little bit of a kind of funny cheese to it. We tried to keep it as serious as we could with the creatures and. And just make a good, kind of scary, dark movie. It's basically the idea was to do kind of like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre with creatures.
Yeah.
was kind of the tone, so.
What's your opinion on the Christmas Day opening?
I think it's going to be pretty cool. I mean, there's actually, you know, with I Am Legend coming out before, so our buddy Francis did. And
the Scream movies did really well during that week. I don't know if people ask about that, but, I mean, that's a huge movie-going week. So, like, every day that week is almost like a Friday or a Saturday, so.
Because of your extensive experience, obviously, over the years now with all the Scream effects, what was the most complicated element to do in terms of the effects for this picture that you're fairly, very much proud of?
Predatorship in tears,
I'm trying to be the most complex without being a total spoiler.
Yeah.
One of the hardest scenes is still not completely been spoiled yet. I'm trying to not spoil everything because it gets real easy with every interview. You give away one little hit in each one and all of a sudden there's nothing left to find out in the theater. So, yeah, it's always trying to dampen ourselves on that.
I mean, the big thing was just there's a lot of shots.
And the ship crash stuff in the beginning.
Yeah, that was actually
was actually some of the more intense stuff with it. You know, as it's plowing over a whole forest of trees and all the fire and all that. That stuff's pretty involved.
Yeah, every tree had to be completely 3D. We built these simulations so as the ship actually hits, the trees physically bend over and start snapping and breaking as the ship kind of plows over it.
And the trophy room was pretty involved too. So.
Yeah, because that's a fully digital.
I just let that out.
Yeah. Well, that's on that clip now. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's on the internet.
Can we talk a little bit about just the title? What is the Requiem part of the... Why Requiem? What is that?
Well, it's kind of two things. One, it was, you know, trying to show that more of the adult theme...
There's a real answer we can't give you on the record.
R means something, but well, no. I mean, it's also just, it was supposed to be make it more adult. I mean, that's which is basically the big thing with the movie. I mean, the last one was a little bit more just kind of a normal sci-fi. Where ours is much more of a this one's a much more darker tone. I mean, I think you saw from that clip, it's a lot kind of meaner of a movie.
Can you guys obviously speak as fans and have high reverence for both franchises. Can you talk about both what the Alien films and the Predator films mean to you? I mean, do they help get you guys into this?
Well, it's funny, Colin and I have said this before. We go on a lot of movie pitches, and you know, a lot of times you don't just talk about the project you're there to talk about. You talk about things you like, you know, what your tastes are, and we're always like, Predator, the best mission movie ever made, like, you know, bar none. And then Aliens, just from a horror standpoint, has scared the piss out of us when we were 8 years old. You know, and just love that movie. Also, though, it's a scary action film, but it's got a real heart to it. I mean, the whole Ripley Newt dynamic and her starting as a mom and having become a soldier is like just great character writing in there.
And also, I mean, Cameron was a big influence. I mean, for us when we moved out here, we saw Terminator 2, and that was like because we were already doing like visual effects in Chicago, and it was like once we saw that movie, we're like, we got to get to LA. I mean, it's you know, you can't work on toothpaste commercials forever in Chicago, so it's like, had to get out here. So, I mean, that was, you know, like when we first saw Aliens, it was literally on a pay-per-view in a hotel room, and our parents were like at some craft show or something. We kept flipping on the channel, we'd watch it for a few minutes, we thought we'd hear him in the hallway, flip the channel back, go back, and didn't realize every time we did that, we kept getting billed, like $15. So we got like a $200 bill, and our parents just about killed us over, but... You know, that was our first time seeing it. It's just, you know, we're just huge Cameron fans, too. I mean, I'd say that's probably, I'd rate, like, for me, the favorite ones, the Aliens, Predator, and then Alien. It would be, like, my top three.
Would Predator 2 fall into
that? Yeah, lower.
Well, I did notice a small slight music cue from Predator 2 in there.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, there's a lot of stuff in Predator 2.
Yeah, like, it's just, the additional...
It doesn't hold up as well. Like, no, you put Predator in, I mean, like, we're going to have watched it. I haven't actually seen it on film yet. I've seen it, like, 40 times.
On Friday.
But on Friday, the Jules Verne thing, we're going to get to see it, which will be cool. Yeah. But, I mean, that movie, you watch that movie on DVD, it's still timeless. Predator 2, you throw it in, I mean... There's some funny stuff.
The rayon shirts. The rayon shirts don't hold up as well.
They
don't stand the test of time. So,
are you guys showing these same clips at the Jules Verne, or are you guys showing some different clips?
I think we're doing those two clips.
That's not been decided yet.
It's either that or the opening or something. We're still working that out.
Yeah, we'll figure that out tomorrow probably.
You mentioned plans for an extended DVD. What other extras can you do for a Blu-ray and HD?
You know, I'm trying to. I think there's some extra concept art stuff. There's a whole bunch of stuff we're still going over with the DVD people. I mean, we're still actually doing the DI on it. We have to go there tonight and finish.
Yeah,
I mean,
we just literally the last bit of timing, color timing work on the theatrical was finished on Friday. So we're going to just start really getting into the DVD stuff in the next week or two.
So what's your final running time on
this
film?
You know, I'd have to ask Dan. 96 or something? It's right around 90. Yeah.
And then
94, 96. It's in that neighborhood.
And you guys work together. Do you guys have like similar minds about a lot of stuff? Or
yeah, we have to. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to sit here together.
it's interesting. I mean, some things we're completely aligned on. Some things we're very different about, which is nice because we get to play devil's advocate a lot. Which is a nice thing, where if a director is by himself, if there's something he's not quite sure about, he has to be careful who he says, I don't know about this, because, that usually looks like a sign of weakness, where I can go to him and go, is this idea stupid? Or he can go, yeah, that's a fucking retarded idea, and we don't do it, or vice versa, because this idea is good. So it lets us kind of push each other, and it lets us kind of battle out the idea, so that when we actually show up on set, we know that we've kind of looked at both sides of an issue, picked the way we needed to go, and then we kind of stick with that direction.
As a practical man on set, is one of you maybe more about how it deals with the actors and the other one
We're pretty interchangeable. Sometimes one take, Colin would give a note, and then the next take I go out and give a note, and we'd work on stuff like that. But generally, we gotta be pretty unified and everything.
Yeah, I mean, on the visual effects side, we're on the 3D, and Greg does more on the 2D side. We have a little bit more of a split up on that, but the
dealing with the cast and everything is really important that they kind of feel like everyone's on the same page.
What's the strategy of editing in terms of the assemblies and different cuts for how you guys go about that?
What we did on this, which was really cool, was because of the whole final cut system, we were able to, and our editor, Dan, is just blazingly quick. As we were shooting the movie, first we did previs for all the battle sequences, and then we storyboarded out the whole film and cut it all together. So we literally had a full movie of storyboards. And then as we'd shoot, he'd be cutting stuff all during the week. And then every weekend when we're up in Vancouver, we'd literally watch whatever the assembly was of the movie the whole time. And the cool thing about that was we were able to make changes on set. So we'd be shooting something and go we needed a close-up of this. We could then go tell second unit, pick up this shot, without it actually being extra days of our schedule. Or we could say, hey, we don't need this scene now. It's not needed for the movie. Don't waste your time on this. Move on.
But sometimes I'd wait till he left, and then I'd sneak in to Dan, and he'd fucking change his stuff. So just depending. I'd be like, what? He's doing? What the hell is he doing? No, he can't do that.
Is there even a need for, an assistant director? Or you guys...
Well, we had a second unit director... But then, the assistant director is in charge of scheduling everything. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's a monumental task all on its own. Especially, we had 52 days of shooting, and we had,
42 moves.
42 company moves, which is kind of insane. Cause it literally means that
we're never anywhere more than a day.
Some days we would do 3 company moves, because... Because the movie, the last one, once I got in the temple, you were in the temple for, 45 minutes. Every 3 minutes in our movie, you're literally in a completely different location in the town. And now part of the idea was to make get the movie as big as we can to show all the shit going on all over the place, but it also meant the actual filming was going to be a nightmare. So the assistant director, that was his main task, was getting everything scheduled. We kept having towns, because when they found out we wanted to fire 50 caliber machine guns and everything, these towns magically started not wanting us shooting there anymore, because you could hear the gun for 4 miles as it echoes through the valley. So so whenever we'd lose a location, he would scramble the schedule, we'd find a new place, so that was his main task, was to get all that crazy stuff sorted out so we could focus on the performances and everything.
You guys have been involved in so many landmark effects films. What do you think is the next level that you can take visual effects?
Stereoscopic
3D stuff's going to be the future.
I don't know if you guys have seen Beowulf or not, but the 3D, the stereoscopic aspect of that experience is, I thought it was awesome. And
yeah,
that's,
and I mean, I wouldn't bet against Cameron either. I mean, if you have a good idea, I think it's going to be, it's going to be the future, I think. It's also, with
it brings you into the picture more.
Yeah, I mean,
I
find myself with my home theater at home, it's like, I'll just wait for the DVD. It's like, But stereoscopic, you have to kind of get your ass off the sofa and get to the theater and actually watch it. It's a cool thing because, like, going to the theater should be an experience. It shouldn't be a chore, you know. And having something like stereoscopic, you know, would be something that you can only experience there. I mean, 3D TVs, 3D plasmas probably won't be out for another 8 years, 7 years or something, realistically. So, you know, I think that's going to be an experience that will be unique to the cinema for a while, which will keep people going there.
Could you talk to the one thing that you were talking before, I'd love to get it on tape, is the fact of using the different Foleys and using them in Mastery. Are we mastering a lot of the sound effects and everything off the original Aliens and Predator films? Could you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, that was just, like, such a big thing for us, because especially, like, in the last movie, you know, I think the Predator vision didn't quite sound as full, because it didn't really have all the heartbeats and all that stuff, so we made sure, you know, they pulled all the original sound effects, like, where the aliens get killed, that squeal that you heard in Aliens, it's actually called, they call that the peacock elephant, I guess, and it was a weird one-off recording in a zoo where they happened to be recording a peacock, and in the background, a baby elephant squealed at that exact time. And that's the exact noise. And they just literally use that same sound effect over and over again. So we did the same thing. And it just...
And
wanted to make
sounds
sure the
from Mother, from the original Alien,
from the computer.
From Mother, for the type hitting the screen, we use that. The plasma caster from original Predator.
Cracks, all that stuff
cracks.
Is all the same.
Yeah, there's a...
It's just to make the movie feel familiar.
I mean, in certain places, the original recordings kind of showed their age and their quality. So we would layer new recordings on top, but a lot of the fundamental layers. So a lot of sound effects sometimes can be 20, 30, 50 layers of sounds all mixed together at once. And so a lot of ours, the bottom, the foundation of them will be from the original. So we didn't do anything where in the final movie it would sound kind of analog or sound antique. So we want, you know, wherever that we ran the risk of that, we would layer new stuff in on top.
And you also, there were music cues from
Yeah, when we had Brian do the score, we told him the idea was we wanted to be kind of a blend of Aliens and Alien 3, sort of on the music. So again, keep it familiar. We also said we really wanted the bongo drums from Predator. So make sure on all the key moments and of all the Predator shots that you get that. You know, again, it's just to give it a little bit of the nostalgia and make it feel, you know, make it feel familiar. Because, you know, it's like we wanted to really get back to that kind of old sort of feeling with it.
Now, are you guys already looking for your next job? You know what you're getting directing next? Or are you guys waiting on to do anything?
We've got two big things.
There's some things cooking
right now.
Yeah.
So.
And they are.
Yeah, I can't really talk about them yet, but maybe another week or two.
Well, once the ink.
One's fantasy and one's sci-fi.
Are they based at Fox? Are you guys like...
They're all over the place.
I know you guys mentioned that you guys, even though McGee's directing it, that you guys would have liked to take a whack at.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
So is it something permanent like? You know, is it something being remade that you haven't heard about?
No, these are two originals.
Both original movies, yeah.
That you guys came up with?
Nope. We have our own script that we have a big disaster film that we're actually almost done writing ourselves, which maybe won't be for the next thing, but maybe the thing after that. Big sci-fi disaster, so...
You say fantasy. Is it Lord of the Rings-like fantasy, or is it more...
I don't know.
keep fishing there. Keep fishing.
Do you guys have any plans for maybe a TV series of project?
We've talked about looking at the TV. I mean, basically, it's always better to get in the TV after you've done a movie. Because we talked about, like, last year, and it was like, you know, you come in, if you start, like, a TV show, it's always better to start if the movie does good, and everything's going to put you in a better place for figuring out. But that's something we're definitely interested in, but I want to maybe do another movie or so first before getting into that craziness.
And you guys are directing as the Strauss brothers. You guys are not going on your separate ways?
No.
Yeah, staying
always
together.
I mean, even after we finished shooting this, we shot a bunch of commercials, and we still do stuff like that. Thanks. Pay the bills.
We're going to do like a, you guys in that Hughes Brothers.
Those guys are back together now,
right?
They're
together, right? I think they are.
But do you guys think that maybe... you know, what is Fox looking at? Have they told you guys this does well? Next year, 2 years, they want the sequel to this thing? Or?
You know, I didn't really talk any timelines with them. I mean, you know, I think there's definitely a wait and see kind of attitude there. I mean, I always believe that it's always better to always have a little bit of a gap, just so that the audience builds up a little bit of a hunger. You know, if you, like, I think every time if you come out with the exact next year, sometimes you know you might not maximize the
exposure.
The exposure, so.
Those two other properties, are they comic book adaptations by any chance at all? What's it? What's their line
point? Let's start with the Alien and Predator franchises now basically inextricably linked, or are they, you know, can you envision like just standalone Predator films again?
I think there'll be definitely another AVP.
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard for us to speak for what those guys are thinking over there, but I'd say your chances of a AVP-3 are a lot greater. You get that first before you'll get another Predator 3 or an Alien 5.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of it is just looking at it from a pure financial standpoint. I mean, you get two fan bases or you just get one, and it's like, you know, it's at the end of the day, I mean, they got, you know, the whole idea of making movies is to make money off
them. Don't get us wrong, I'd love to see both of those movies get made. Just knowing those guys, you know, it's hard to say, but you know, if you look at the curve of the financial performance of the last Alien movies, it was kind of going like this. So it's really, you know, they got to make movies to make money. So there's that unfortunate pressure on all of us.
Great, cool. Thank you.